This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه ومن والاه ثم أما بعد to proceed. So inshallah today we'll go over القواعد الفقهية, legal maxims, and basically to give you like a bird's view on where we are, because that's always important, because many times, you know, growing up when I attended classes, sometimes you get lost, you don't know where you are. So let's just zoom in on where we are. So this is the Al-Qawaid Al-Fiqhiyya class. Which means legal maxims. And we said that this class, the book and the class, will be divided into four sections. And we said the first of the four sections would be the intros. And we said the introductions about the 10 principles that introduce any subject. And we went over the, you know, the definition and the relationship between the science and other sciences and the fruit of learning it and all of the, you know, الحد والموضوع الثمرة نسبته وفضله والواضع الاسم الاستمداد حكم الشارع مسائل والبعض بالبعض اكتفى ومن دار الجميع هذا الشرف. So we went over the 10 principles, we went over the introductions, and then we said that the second section is about the 5 major legal maxims. And we said the first one is الأمور بمقاصدها, and that's where we are. الأمور بمقاصدها is the first one of the 5 major legal maxims, which means matters are judged by their intentions. Matters are judged by their intentions. Okay. So where we are here? So and certainly, you know, the third section will be about the minor legal maxims, and the third section will be about the legal regulators or الضوابط الفقهية, the regulators that belong to one chapter only. So we are here. And then we said under each one of these قواعد, we will talk about certain things. We said we will talk about, wait a second. Let me get this back. So we said, Oh, really? We said we will talk about certain things, mainly 4 things that we will talk about under every one of these maxims. And the first thing is the expression, different expressions and the explanation of the meaning of the maxim. And then justification, substantiation, proof, the evidence, so proving the maxim. And the third would be guidelines and benefits. Guidelines and benefits. And the fourth will be what? Applications. But not only applications, but branches, the branches of the maxim, subsidiary maxims and applications. So where we are when it comes to matters are judged by their intentions, what are we doing now? We're done with the explanation. We're done with the proving. We're in the guidelines and the benefits that we learned from the maxim. And last time, we talked about, we were talking about the conditions last time. The conditions for the validity of the intention. The conditions for the validity of the intention. Prior to this, we were talking about what? We were talking about the deeds that don't require an intention. And then we moved on to the conditions of the validity of the intention. So this is where we are now. Conditions. Of validity. How can we ensure the validity of our intentions? And then we said that the conditions of the validity, are two groups. One group is the positive conditions, the things that are, required for the intention to be valid. The second are the negative, which means things that must be avoided for the validity of the intention. We call this adam al-munafi, absence of nullifiers. Absence of nullifiers. So when we talked about the conditions that are required to be present, we spoke about Islam or faith. We spoke about reason. We spoke about tamyiz or discernment. And we spoke about knowledge of the intended. You have to know what you're doing. And it actually, if you know what you're doing, then you have an intention. Then we will talk today about adam al-munafi, absence of nullifiers. Absence of nullifiers. Okay, so when we talk about the absence of nullifiers, we will talk about the following. We will talk about seven different nullifiers. Seven nullifiers. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. It doesn't always work, but anyway. So, shirk is certainly the first one, and since this is in English, I'm going to write from left to right here. So, ash-shirk, or associating partners with Allah, is the first one. At-tashriq, that is basically mixing intentions, is the second. And it's not all kinds of tashriq, not all kinds of mixing, and that's what we will learn about today. Then, at-taraddud wa-shak, which would be hesitation and doubt. Taraddud wa shak. Hesitation. And doubt. Then, al-qat' wal-istithna. Al-qat', which is the interrupted aniyya. Interruption. Al-istithna is to make exceptions. لاستثناء to make exceptions from the نية. And then القلب, which is to switch, to change, to flip, switch, change the نية. Okay. And the last one would be العزم على فعل ما ينافيها. العزم على فعل المنافي. Intending to do a nullifier. And we'll talk about this in detail. What if you intend when you're fasting to eat? What if you intend when you're praying to drink or to speak? Okay, so now this is where we are. Okay, yes. So this is where we will be today. We will talk about the tashriq as the nullifiers that need to be absent for the niyya to be valid, because we're talking about the conditions of the validity of the niyya. This is under the guidelines, which is one of four parts of any qaida that we will speak about: explanation, justification, guidelines, branches, and applications. Okay, so having said that, let's start. Absence of nullifiers. You know, for the niyyah to be valid, you have to ensure that you don't have any nullifier of the niyyah, the validity of the niyyah. The first nullifier would be, of course, shirk. إِنَّهُمَا يُشْرِكْ بِاللَّهِ فَقَدْ حَرَّمَ اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ الْجَنَّةِ وَمَأْوَاهُ النَّارِ وَمَا لِلظَّالِمِينَ مِنْ أَنصَارِ. So the first one is to ascribe partners to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and that would invalidate any niyyah, and that will earn the person a place in hellfire for eternity. So hopefully we don't need to go into much detail about this, because we should be clear of this, I hope. Then at-tashriq, which is mixing intentions. At-tashriq, which is mixing intentions. Now, mixing intentions, I mean, it does not mean that people don't fall into shirk. People do fall into shirk. I'm just saying that hopefully the people who are here and the people who are listening to this class are not basically devoting any act of worship to other than God, or to God and someone in addition to God, and so on. Because that would be the shirk that would earn us a place in the hellfire for eternity. So the tashriq is mixing intentions. Tashriq is mixing intentions. So what are the types of tashriq, which is mixing intentions or combining intentions? The first type of tashriq, mixing intentions, combining intentions, or mixing, is when you basically mix. So here, it's an act of worship. So I'm not going to just write act of worship, just worship. So an act of worship, you mix it with mubah, something that's mubah, permissible, or ostentation, showing off, pretension, ostentation, pretension, showing off. Are they the same? No, they are not the same. But, you know, for the sake of brevity, we will put them together and then we will discuss them in some detail. The second one is to mix an act of worship with, the second one is not to mix an act of worship No. The first one we already covered, which is basically to devote an act of worship to Allah and someone else. This is the second one. So the first one was the shirk itself. This is the second one, which is to mix worship with mubah or ostentation. The third one is mixing two acts of worship together. The fourth one is to mix two tasarrufat, is to mix two tasarrufat, not acts of worship, tasarrufat, legal conduct. Tasarruf is legal conduct. Mix two tasarrufat without clear intention. Or to basically, to say, and we just to get this out of the way, to say to your wife, "Anti alayya haram," you are forbidden to me, intending zihar and talaq simultaneously. Where does that go? This is not an act of worship. It's a tasarruf, legal conduct. But here, where does that go? Is that zihar or talaq? This is what we will discuss when we get to it. So to mix two tasarrufat, tasarruf, legal conduct is the best translation for tasarruf, because it's not just any action, it's a legally consequential action. So it's a legal conduct in two of them. So we're already done with shirk, which is to devote an act of worship to Allah and someone else, and that is, the ultimate loss. But then we will talk about worship plus mubah versus ostentation, and then we will talk about worship plus worship. And when we talk about worship plus worship, worship comes in two different forms. There is fard and there is mandub. So we will talk about three different types under this one. Fard plus fard, fard plus mandub, mandub plus mandub. To mix the intention for two obligations, to mix the intention for two recommended acts, to mix the intention for one obligation and one recommended act. These are all different. So there will be three different categories under this discussion. Let us first start with worship. And to mix worship and something that is mubah. Mixing worship plus mubah. What would be examples to mixing worship plus mubah? Mubah may not necessarily be simply mubah, it could also be preferred or something. But mixing worship with something that is mubah. The very clear examples, there are many clear examples. If you go to Hajj, if you go to Hajj, will you also not be wanting to see new places? Is there something in some part of you wanting to see new places? Don't people sometimes bike to Mecca? They take a tour through whatever, Asia, Europe, Africa, they bike to Mecca. Would that invalidate their Hajj? Because they are going to Mecca, but they are also wanting, to tour all the cities on their way to Mecca. Or they are flying, but they are interested in touring or seeing new places and so on. And even when they go to Mecca, they will see they are interested to do tourism inside Mecca and Medina and do things other than Hajj per se. Would some people not be interested in trade? At least they want to buy some gifts for their family and stuff. When you fast, aren't you a little bit interested in dieting? When you make wudu or ghusl, aren't you a little bit interested in refreshment and cleanliness? you know, all of these things are happening. So does that invalidate your niyyah? No, although it may diminish it. May diminish the reward, I'm sorry, not the niyyah. May diminish the reward, but it does not invalidate. And it depends on, you know, how much is it, like, you know, because some people can go to Hajj every year, but they are business people. They do business, they purchase stuff, and they come back and sell it. So, like, part of the journey, like an integral part of the journey is business. So it may diminish the reward, but it will not invalidate the niyyah. May diminish the reward. May diminish the reward, will not invalidate the niyyah. Okay. So when the Prophet ﷺ prayed and taught the people the prayer simultaneously, is that mixing intentions? Yes. So he prayed. And what if you pray to avoid like an annoying person? What if you extend your prayer and someone walks into the room or walks into the masjid and you just want to avoid the annoyance and you extend your prayer to avoid them? Does that invalidate your niyyah? It doesn't. It may diminish the reward. It's not like you're extending the prayer because you're just enjoying your soft conversation with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala so much. But it will not invalidate your niyyah. Will not invalidate your niyyah. So you see how lenient the Sharia is with sin worship with mubah, because the Sharia does recognize that we have needs. And sometimes, لا ينفك يعني لا تنفك هذه عن تلك, or they're associated, they are bound together, like making wudu and refreshment and cleanliness, or ghusl and refreshment and cleanliness, fasting and dieting, trade and hajj, hajj and tourism, they're just bound together. So the Sharia recognizes that we are human beings, we have needs, so there is no problem there. However, when it comes to ostentation, it's a little bit different. It's a little bit different. And there is a particular excerpt that I will want to read for you because it's very important, very valuable, Nas from Matalib ul-Nuha. Imam al-Ruhaybani said in Matalib ul-Nuha, and this will be a long read, but I want to read it for you because it will be very beneficial. And I just want you to notice, pay attention to the following, because he will talk here about ostentation. At the outset, at the beginning of action, ostentation that emerged during, like you had a niyyah already, and then the thought of showing off, you know, landed on you after you had a niyyah. After you had a niyyah, the thought of showing off landed on you. Then pay attention to two distinctions. One is when you resist and fight it off. The second one is when it persists. The thought of ostentation persists. So there is ostentation at the outset. There is ostentation that emerges after having a good niyyah. When the ostentation emerges after having a good niyyah, it either, you either fight it off or it persists. And if it persists, then did it dominate? Is it equal? Is it subservient, subsidiary, secondary to the niyyah of taqarrub or devotion to Allah? Okay? So these are different. So now pay attention. I'm going to read this excerpt from Matalib ul-Nuha by Imam al-Ruhaybani rahimahullah ta'ala. He says, the validity of it which means the validity of the prayer, is not invalidated, or the prayer is not invalidated, or the intention for the prayer is not invalidated after performing it with a valid intention, intending to teach it, as the Prophet ﷺ did, or intending to avoid a dispute. Okay, so this is the part that, I'm not going to read this part. This is the part that we went over already, you know, about, you know, praying to avoid like an annoying person, or fasting for to, you know, lose weight, or making wudu for refreshment, etc. But, okay, so the part about ostentation. He quotes this, Matalib ul-Nuha is a commentary on Ghayat al-Muntaha. You know, Ghayat al-Muntaha combines between al-Aqna' wal-Muntaha. So you have very important books in the Madhab al-Hanabali. Al-Aqna' wal-Muntaha are extremely important books. Ghayat al-Muntaha combined them because sometimes they disagreed. And then Matalib ul-Nuha would be a commentary on the book that combined them. However, here he will be quoting Al-Hafiz Ibn Rajab al-Hanbali. He's not actually, he's not writing a commentary in this segment that I will read now on Ghayat al-Muntaha, although it is part of Matalib al-Nuha, but it's a commentary on an excerpt from the speech of Al-Hafiz Zain al-Din Ibn Rajab al-Hanbali, who is the author of which book? Jami' al-Ulum wal-Hikam, a very important, very, very, like, monumental, important book. Not limited to the madhab, but for all people. So he says, pure ostentation rarely occurs in a believer's obligatory prayer or fasting, though it may occur in acts like charity or hajj. So no one will be, no true believer be praying with, you know, to show off. Yeah, it's very hard. Or fasting to show off. Hajj, sometimes. You know, sadaqah, yeah, sometimes. But, you know, not praying and fasting. He says, no Muslims... doubts that such acts are nullified. No Muslim doubts that such acts are nullified. Sometimes the worship is for Allah. And ostentation joins in. If ostentation accompanies the act from its inception, then the authentic texts indicate its invalidity, even though some later scholars disputed this. So the later scholars who disputed this, they said if it accompanies the act at its inception, but it is not the dominant intention, it would still not invalidate it. Greatly diminish the reward, but not invalidate. However, the official position is if it accompanies the act at the outset, at the beginning, it invalidates the intention. Okay, so he says, if the act was initially for Allah and then ostentation occurred after beginning it, and the person rejected it, it doesn't harm their worship, and it remains valid without dispute. You fight off the, you know, you get the thoughts cross your mind of showing off, you fight them off, that's it. You're safe. No dispute about this. You are safe. But then he says, if the thought of ostentation persists, whether it nullifies the act or not, is a matter of disagreement, if it persists. Why is a matter of disagreement? Because does it persist and dominate? Is it equal? Or is it subservient to the other intention of devotion to Allah? So it's a matter of disagreement among the predecessors, as mentioned by Ibn Jarir, that's Imam Ibn Jarir al-Tabari. The Imam Ahmad preferred that the act is not nullified. The act is not nullified by this because the worship was initially built on a sound foundation. So the later occurrence of this thought does not invalidate it. Others mentioned, other than Imam Ahmad, people other than Imam Ahmad mentioned, there is no sin in an act mixed with ostentation if the intention to obey God dominates. For good deeds erase bad ones. Conversely, if the intention to show off dominates, the person's sins, according to the narrations forbidding it. If the motives are equal, so the person is unable, is just like, can't really decide what he's doing this for. If they are equal, then there is neither reward for them nor sin upon them. There is neither reward nor sin. Based on the verse, and, you know, so the verse here, وَأَخَرُونَ اَعْتَرَفُوا بِذُنُوبِهِمْ خَلَطُوا عَمَلًا صَالِحًا وَآخَرَ سَيِّئًا عَسَى اللَّهُ أَيَتُوبَ عَلَيْهِمْ إِنَّ اللَّهَ غَفُورٌ رَحِيمٌ. So others, and there are others who have admitted their sins, they have mixed a righteous deed with another that was bad. So here, it's not mixing the deeds. The intention itself is a deed. So they're mixing bad and good intentions, mixing them. Perhaps Allah will turn to them in forgiveness. So they're not getting rewarded, but at the same time, there is no sin. Then he says, and an act of worship is not to be abandoned out of fear of being attributed to riya. You know, sometimes, and this is important, why I want you to pay attention to the parentheses that I have, because the original text said what? The original text said, and the act of worship is not, that is between parentheses, that's the original text, and an act of worship is not to be abandoned out of fear of riya. Out of fear of riya. He explained by inserting between the text out of fear of, then he inserts being attributed to riya. So it's not out of fear of riya, it's out of fear of being called the murai. So, like, people are collecting sadaqah, and then you really, really want to give sadaqah, and then you say to yourself, no. You know, they may say I am doing it to show off. This would be haram. Haram to refrain from giving sadaqah out of fear from people thinking that you're showing off. Once you have worked on your intention and rectified your intention, ignore the people, basically. Remove them. Talked about fana ash-shuhud before in manazil as-sa'irin. That's what it is. Remove them now from your calculation. So, and an act of worship is not to be abandoned out of fear of being attributed to riya. If the intention is sincere, because abandoning it for the sake of people is shirk, just as performing it for their sake is riya. Then he says, and we hope for a reward for one who recites the Quran and does similar acts without intention, especially in these times when calamities have stunned the minds. In Al-Mubda', that's an important Hanbali book, there is no reward without intention by consensus. Even though, now he gives his commentary on this statement in Mubda', even though some scholars chose otherwise, which is befitting his grace, glory be to him, for he promised not to waste the reward of those who do good deeds. إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يُضِيعُ أَجْرَ مَنْ أَحْسَنَ عَمَلًا is what he meant to say. So what did he get now from this important excerpt? You got that aniyya, that basically aniyya, that mixes like a bad intention or like pretentious intention that mixes with your valid intention at the outset is likely invalidating. That's the official position. Although some people said it depends on which one dominated. Now, if it emerges during the act after having a valid niyyah, sincere niyyah, and then the pretentious thoughts emerge during the act, and you resist those intentions, then certainly your niyyah is valid without dispute if you fight them off. Because bad thoughts will happen. Bad thoughts will happen all the time. So don't worry about that. Then if it persists, then did it dominate? Is it equal to the intention of devotion? Or is it subservient to the intention of devotion? Secondary to the intention of the devotion? If it dominates, then there is no doubt that your action is invalid. If it is less than the niyyah of devotion, is subservient to the niyyah of devotion, the dominant intention, you're comfortable that you're just doing this for Allah. Yes, because we're social beings and we like to be liked and we like to be praised and we like to be accepted and all of that stuff. We get this like nagging thought and we, but if it is less and you're still keeping it as, you know, you're still keeping it under pressure, so it's not dominating and it's not equal, then hopefully your act is valid. Your niyyah of devotion is still valid. If it is equal, if it became equal, then it's neutral. لا لك ولا عليك. لا لك ولا عليك. No reward, no punishment. No sin, no hasana, no sayyah. So that is basically the difference between mixing with mubah and mixing with pretentious intention or ostentation or showing off. Which one was much less harmful than your niyyah? Mubah. That is why don't pursue the dunya with your deen. If you want to pursue the dunya, pursue the dunya. It's much better off, you know, if you seek knowledge to show off, then you're much better off going on a trip, you know, finding some pleasure, eating a bowl of ice cream, like doing whatever it is that would give you a little gratification, because you will be much safer. You will be much safer with mubah than ostentation. Okay. Now, next is what? And before we move on to this one, what did he say at the end about reciting the Quran without intention? He said something about reciting the Quran without intention, and he said that we hope that the person will get a reward. What is he trying to address here? He's trying to address the very consistent qaida that we talked about before, لا ثواب إلا بنية. There is no reward without intention. And he says in Mubda' he said this is a matter of agreement. It's a matter of consensus. There is no reward without intention. But he says in our times that, you know, calamities have stunned the minds and so on, we hope that people will be rewarded for good deeds without intention. Without intention. So he's trying to address this. لا ثواب إلا بنية. لا, no, ثواب, reward. إلا, except with بنية, with a intention. Okay. So I think that the best way to answer this is to say There is a niyyah without a niyyah. Which niyyah? The general niyyah of Islam. The general niyyah of submitting God is a niyyah that basically permeates through all of your life. Because the state of the believer proclaims لسان حال المؤمن إن صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين إن صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين. So if the believer got himself accustomed to doing good, so it is about, you know, the orientation towards God and doing good, the general orientation towards God and doing good. If you get yourself accustomed to doing good, to the extent that good becomes a second nature. So to guide a blind person across the road, to give water to a thirsty dog, to, you know, make tasbih, to read the Quran, to do things, you know, like good things like this, without تَعْقِدَ قَلْبَكْ عَلَيْهَا, without sort of bringing the intention to heart at the time of doing it, because it is your second nature, then the most generous, it is thought of the most generous, most gracious, that he will not deprive you of reward. Because you've gotten yourself to a point where good deeds are your second nature. Like you don't even think about it. You just do good. So that general orientation towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in doing good is your ongoing intention. It's basically uninterrupted intention. So while it is better and superior to bring on a good intention at the time of the act, at the time of every act, yet without that good intention, that ongoing intention of إن صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين, say my prayer and my rights and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. Then that's your intention. That is your ongoing, uninterrupted intention. So we're done with this part. Now, the third division here is where we will stay, you know. The fourth, we finished it. We finished the fourth. What was the fourth? Legal conduct plus legal conduct. What was the first? Devoting an act of worship to Allah and someone else. What was the second? Mixing between the intention of an act of worship and a mubah or ostentation. What is the fourth? Two legal conducts. To say to your wife, you are haram, anti haramun alayya, stuff like that. Intending zihar and talaq. What happens in this case? It will divert by default to al-awla bil-lafz, to that which is more consistent with the wording. So in this case, when someone says to their wife, anti alayya haram, you are forbidden to me, that is closer to zihar than talaq. It becomes zihar, because it cannot be the two at the same time. It cannot be zihar and talaq at the same time. So it will just go towards zihar because it is more consistent with the wording of zihar than it is with the wording of talaq. So when you have two different legal conducts, then we will go by the most apparent, the closer to the wording or to the utterance. Okay. Now, the third section is the most detailed one, and it will take a little bit of time. So, it's been 45 minutes. We have 15 minutes. What should we do? We can split it. You guys will remember next time. Okay, we'll split it. Just the review before you come next time, because it's important to, you know. Okay, so we said here, worship plus worship. Worship plus worship can be one of three things. Farida, an obligation, plus farida, plus another obligation. Sunnah, plus sunnah, and certainly here, farida, plus sunnah. Try to always, fiqh needs people who are good at math. You know, try to think algorithmically. Fiqh needs algorithms, needs your mind to be organized. Always think about algorithms, divisions, algorithms, charts, graphs. Make this, like when you're studying, you do this yourself. Try to do this as much as you can. So anyway, now let us start by two farts is very easy, and you know we're gonna get done with this in a minute, in 5 minutes. Okay. So he says here, الجمع بين مفروضتين, combining two obligatory acts. Actually, that's me saying this. So فلا صح إلا في الحج والعمرة وهي واجبة في الغسل والوضوء فهما عبادتان من جنس واحد فدخلت الصغرى في الكبرى لكن لا يجوز له الجمع بين قضاء وكفارة أو ظهر وعصر أو زكاة وفدية. So it's not valid except in حج وعمرة, also obligatory in the madhab, also in ghusl and wudu, they are two acts of worship of the same genus, etc. Okay, I just want you, like, fard and fard. Fard and fard, by default, doesn't work. To combine fard and fard, think about this. By default, fard and fard doesn't work. Just remember this. Doesn't work, doesn't work, doesn't work. And now, let's talk about a few exceptions. Let's talk about a few exceptions. But fard and fard works? No, fard and fard doesn't work. That's what you need to remember. Let's talk about a few exceptions. Fard and fard, no, doesn't work, except Hajj and Umrah. Okay. Ghusl and wudu. What about kafarat, expiations? Yes, expiations can sometimes overlap. Expiations can sometimes overlap, but we will talk about expiations in some detail next time. But for now, when it comes to the acts, you know, acts of worship, when it comes to acts that are intended for themselves and acts that are means to other acts, to the performance of other, these are means. These are not intended for themselves. You know, ghusl and wudu are not intended for themselves. Like you don't make, you always make wudu for something, although it's a great ibadah and you get rewarded for the very act of wudu and so on. Still a means to you know, making salah permissible for you to remove your ritual impurity and so on. But Hajj and Umrah are acts that are intended for themselves. Umrah in the Hanbali Madhab is wajib. In the Hanbali Madhab, Umrah is wajib. And I think it's the Shafi'i as well. So Hanbali and Shafi'i, not in the Maliki and Hanafi. But Hanbali and Shafi'i, Umrah is wajib. Do we have the ability to combine Hajj and Umrah? Yes, al-Qarin, person performing Hajj and Umrah together. In the Madhab, they don't do anything more than the Mufrid, the person who's doing Hajj only. In the Madhab, they don't do anything more than the Mufrid, the person who's doing Hajj only. Okay, so here they were able to combine two obligatory acts together, and one went into the other. even though each one is intended for itself. It's just not a wasila. It's not a means like ghusl and wudu. Okay? Great. Now, if you have two acts of worship of the same genus, and one of them is minor and the other one is major, the minor goes under the major. Ghusl and wudu. Ghusl and wudu. If you make ghusl, it will suffice for wudu. You make ghusl, you're intending just to remove all impurities, major and minor, it will suffice for your wudu. So ghusl and wudu. Now, so we said that these are exceptions. And we said that the rule is farida and farida do not mix. There is a ruling in the Hanbali madhab that when you are a masbuk, a latecomer to the prayer, you are a latecomer to the prayer. You came in and the imam is in ruku'ah, and you join the prayer and you make takbirat al-ihram, Allahu Akbar, and then you go down to ruku'ah. What about the takbira of ruku'ah? Is the takbira of ruku'ah, when you make the when you're praying and you want to make ruku'ah, you will say Allahu Akbar and make ruku'ah, right? Is the takbira of ruku'ah wajib in the Hanbali madhab? It's not wajib in the Hanafi madhab, for instance, but is it wajib in the Hanbali madhab to make takbira for ruku'ah? Yes, it is wajib. Wajib. What about the takbira of al-ihram, consecration of prayer? What about this takbira? Wajib? It's a pillar. It is a pillar. A rukn. Okay. But for the sake of this discussion, we're just treating all obligations as obligations. So these are two obligations. Okay. If we say two obligations cannot be put together, you can't intend the two obligations with the same intention. How come in the Hanbali madhab they would allow you to say Allahu Akbar once and go down to ruku' without repeating Allahu Akbar? There's a difference in the madhab. You know, some people in the madhab would say that one intention is sufficient for both takbirs. One, you make the intention for takbirat al-ihram and takbirat al-ruku' together. That is a minor position in the madhab. That is not the dominant position. The dominant position is, if you make the intention for takbirat al-ihram and takbirat al-ruku' together, your salah is invalid. If you make the intention for takbirat al-ihram and takbirat al-ruku' together, you say Allahu Akbar, intending takbirat al-ihram and the takbirah for ruku' together, your salah is invalid. But they would still allow you to make one takbirah and go down to ruku'. You make the intention of takbirat al-ihram only, and takbirat al-ruku' tasqut, is waived, falls off, because you are masbuq, you are a latecomer, and the imam is in ruku'. Do you see that? Like subtlety, inshallah, Allah is most generous, like he did this. You know, but some people get a little bit frazzled when it gets to this intricate or subtle. Allah is most generous, most merciful, most gracious. You know, don't panic. But anyway, these are the fiqh details, because they want it to be, it's about consistency with the rules and the principles of fiqh, and fiqh is like math. You know, how Allah deals with people, Allah is most generous. You want to be correct as much as you can. But like I said, even scholars within the same madhab, they disagreed over this. So some scholars within the madhab would say that if you say Allahu Akbar intending both takbirat al-ihram and ruku', it will count for both. The others will say it invalidates your prayer, because you can't mix two intentions of obligations simultaneously. except if you have a proof. And the proof that comes from the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam is clear on Hajj and Umrah. And they never demanded wudu from someone who made ghusl. So it, you know, except if you have a proof. But the default is two obligations. You can't combine the niyyah of two obligations together. They want it to be consistent. And here in Takbirah, they wanted to say that the takbirah that you're making at the, if you are a latecomer or a masbuq, is takbirah al-ihram. Do not intend that you're making the takbirah of ihram and ruku' in one single action, because that doesn't work. They're both obligatory. So since one is rukn, pillar, that is takbirah al-ihram or the consecration, then intend that you're making takbirah al-ihram. The other one falls off, is waived, because you're late. So next time, inshallah, we will have the discussion on al-jam' bayn al-fard wal-mandub wal-jam' bayn al-mandubayn. So combining farida and sunnah, and combining two sunnahs. Combining farida and sunnah, and combining two sunnah. قولوا قولي هذا واستغفر الله لي ولكم سبحانك اللهم وبحمدك اشهد ان لا اله الا انت استغفرك واتوب اليك. And we will come back at 9:15. I'm giving you 18 minutes.